Violence, the Black Body, and Reproductive Justice by Mwende Katwiwa. When I first heard about the murder of Trayvon Martin, I was livid. I remember the searing heat I felt at yet another black person becoming a disposable character in the American narrative of violence against black bodies. Despite my anger, the initial media storm and protests that surrounded his death gave me hope that Americans were finally going to have to confront our blatantly racist society. By the time the Trayvon Martin verdict came out, however, and let's be clear, he was on trial just as much as Zimmerman, the initial feeling of hope I had was long gone. The time in between the injustice of his death and the injustice of his verdict exposed me to how deeply Americans had read into the racist narrative this country has been writing since its discovery. A day after the verdict, I met up with my friend Jose to attend a solidarity rally in remembrance of Trayvon in New Orleans. Before the rally, we sat down to make signs, and I started to think about what the endemic violence against black bodies meant to me as a black woman. I thought back to the pain I saw in Sabrina Fulton, who's Trayvon's mother, in her face when she was on the news, and how I'd seen that face before on countless nameless mothers who I only knew by virtue of their dead black sons. I was 22, and I hadn't thought much about motherhood, but I found myself confronting the truth that I could very easily join their ranks if I were ever to have a child. As I painfully faced the fact that I would never experience the white privilege and luxury of not fearing for my children's safety, I wrote a sign that said, "I fear having a son." In making that sign, I was, without even realizing it, connecting the struggle for reproductive justice that was started by black women to the age-old American narrative of violence against black bodies. In the time since I made the sign, the high-profile deaths of Jordan Russell Davis, Jonathan Farrell, Renisha McBride, Eric Gardner, John Crawford, and now most recently Mike Brown and Azelle Ford have made sure that I don't forget that new chapters in this racist narrative are continually being written. Sister Songs defined reproductive justice framework as the right to have children, not to have children, and to parent the children we have in safe and healthy environments. It is based on the human right to make personal decisions about one's life and the obligation of government and society to ensure that the conditions are suitable for implementing one's decisions. It's important for women of color. It represents a shift for women advocating for control of their bodies from a narrower focus on legal access and individual choice, which is the focus of mainstream organization, to a broader analysis of racial, economic, cultural, and structural constraints of our power. For decades, black women have been advocating for the expansion of women's rights to move beyond the pro-choice, pro-life dichotomy, to encompass our right to health and safety, not just during family planning and childbirth, but also as we raise our children. Young black folks like Trayvon Martin, Jordan Davis, Renisha McBride, John Crawford, Mike Brown, and Azelle Ford did not experience reproductive justice. Black fathers like Eric Gardner did not experience reproductive justice. Their inability to grow up or parent in safety in this society is an integral part of the struggle for RJ that is often overlooked. While mainstream, read, white activists have focused on the limiting pro-choice, pro-life debate, black women realized decades ago that this framework would not work for the complex interactions our bodies, families, and communities experience in this society. In the wake of Mike Brown's death, Imani Gandhi, senior legal analyst for RH Reality Check, posted the following tweets that echoed these sentiments. This is why reproductive justice is important. It goes far beyond the right to terminate pregnancy to include the right to a mother without fear. I saw so many people on Twitter saying, I don't want to have or raise black children in this country. That is a reproductive justice issue. Black and brown women have the right to raise their children without fearing they will be gunned down in the street like animals by cops. We as a society cannot continue to prevent that the historical and contemporary violence on black bodies is not endemic and is not tied to the struggle for reproductive justice that black women began decades ago. We cannot continue to misrepresent the issues of systemic violence against black communities as singular and isolated and not related to our right to be born and live safely in healthy communities as advocated for under the RJ framework. We cannot afford to lose any more of our children due to reproductive oppression at any stages of theirs or our lives.
Thank you. That was Mwende Katwiwa, working with Women with a Vision. What's the name of the piece?
It's called Violence, the Black Body, and Reproductive Justice.
Oh, thank you. It's very powerful. We're here with Mwende, who just read her piece, Mwende Katwiwa, Desiree Evans, and Laura McTighe of Women with a Vision. And they are here to let us know about some of the work that they're doing and to have a conversation about kind of the current context of reproductive justice and what is happening with the black body, police brutality, all of these types of things, and to invite folks to come out and watch a movie and have a discussion this evening. So thank you all for joining us. Let's start by, even though we've had Women with a Vision on our show before, and we always appreciate your analysis, let's start where what with Women with a Vision is doing right now, kind of, you know, yeah, that stuff. Where are we at now with Women with a Vision?
Great. Thank you for that introduction, Kihiji. So, like you said, we wanted to give a little bit of an introduction to our work before going into some of the things or events that are coming up in the next little bit. So our mission is to improve the lives of marginalized women, their families, and communities by addressing the social conditions that hinder their health and well-being. We accomplish this through relentless advocacy, health education, supportive services, and community-based participatory research. I think many of your listeners will likely know Women with a Vision from our No Justice Project, when in 2009 we took on the state of Louisiana to combat the criminalization of women and queer communities, lives, people who were working in street-based economies, and we won. We got a federal judge to rule practices that were happening across the state of Louisiana, but especially in New Orleans, targeting black women, ruled that those were unconstitutional and brought hundreds of people who were unjustly placed on the sex offender registry off. But I think for why we're here today, the history, the longer history of Women with a Vision is incredibly important, and it also explains part of how Women with a Vision was in a place in 2009 to hear the stories that led to and enabled us to launch the No Justice Project. So Women with a Vision is right now celebrating our 25th anniversary. In 1989, two of our foremothers, Ms. Catherine Haywood and Anita Muse, got together in public health meetings. And for people, for younger listeners, 1989 was a really dark place in this city and across the country in terms of the AIDS epidemic. Pretty much, I think, very few treatments that people had, very little information that was out. And what Catherine and Anita saw was that when funds were getting divided up, when condom boxes were being passed out, that they were going to white and mostly gay neighborhoods and not going to black communities across the city. So they started a grassroots outreach project, packing condoms and just going to the communities that they knew and loved. And that commitment to standing with people, to providing folks with the tools they need to stay healthy and alive, to supporting people into living with their dreams is what carries Women with a Vision's work forward today.
Mm. I just want to say, before, I don't know if there's anything that you were necessarily thinking of saying next, but I wanted to appreciate the expansive the expansive way that reproductive justice was put forward as to what not just what is happening with that one specific body, but how then they're able to live with families and raise children and see those children to adulthood and then this kind of societies that those. So I really just wanted to appreciate that. But I think you're going to go ahead and.
I'll talk a little bit about that more. I'm Desiree. I'm the Policy and Communications Director at Women with a Vision. And this month, we're sort of celebrating reproductive justice. It's been 20 years since the founding. It was founded by a group of black women in 1994, the concept, the framework that we're working with today. And it really speaks to what you just mentioned, Kihiji, about that expansiveness of being able to talk about whole communities in our entire lives and what it really means to reproduce, right? And to, like, live healthy, full lives. And so it was at a time when almost all of the feminist organizing was really focusing on Roe versus Wade, the idea of choice and abortion. But this original group of black women were like, but this doesn't really speak to our own lives, because what is choice? We don't have choices. When you're living in poverty, when your entire life is structured by social policy, what is choice in that context? So this was really a framework that was really meant to talk about what are the real decisions we have to make in our lives, and how do we parent the children that we have in healthy ways, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, for, you know, even earlier than that, women of color, black women came together to kind of introduce the intersectional frame. And so reproductive justice was a part of that intersectionality, as we talk about. And it's really allowed us this exciting opportunity to link social justice and human rights issues into the reality of what it means to have true bodily autonomy for ourselves and our children. And it allows us to do this without having to segment, isolate, or pit one priority against each other, right? You have to either be a woman, you have to be a black, you have to be, you know, deal with only housing issues, deal with only environmental issues. It allows us to really think about the whole lived experiences of our lives. and the complex realities of the women we work with. And so that's what Women with a Vision has always done in our work. Even if we don't use the term reproductive justice, we're about addressing the whole woman and the whole experience, and placing the needs of the women we work with at the front and center, and placing their stories at the front and center. We're kind of at a time when a lot of, particularly in D.C., New York, national organizations, mostly white women-led organizations, have sort of co-opted the term reproductive justice. So you'll see a lot of them using the term and getting funded to use the term, but not actually doing what we invented the term to talk about. You know, they'll only be working on abortion. They're working on one issue, and not speaking to our communities, right? And so we're seeing a lot of them use a term, get funding to come do reproductive justice work in the South, but they're not talking to women of color and black women-led organizations who've been doing this work for decades, who are actually talking to the communities that are often don't have the choices. Like, we can't afford to do certain things, right? And so we're seeing a lot of that that happening, and we're trying to really push back against that and to say that you have to speak to us, you have to value our voices and our needs. You can't co-opt our bodies just the way that these anti-choice and like conservative organizations are doing. So you often see, like, in cities like New Orleans or across the South, you have, you know, these conservative groups or the archdiocese pitted against these other mostly white women-led national organizations arguing over black women's bodies, right? So you see these two kind of white supremacy in all its forms and the way that we, our voices are not being heard or valued in that narrative. So we are really here to really celebrate this month about what it is, what reproductive justice is, and how black women and women of color, indigenous women, have been leading that fight for decades, and how that, how does that fight actually exist and look like in our communities. I think one of the things we really want to kind of highlight is that, you know, control of women's bodies also means control of communities. I think that's something that, that Wendy's piece so nicely touched on, and how our communities are so often controlled and manipulated. The miseducation of our youth, restrictions on immigration, mass incarceration, mass criminalization, which is something that women in particular face, because it's not just about being in prison, right? It's about the way that the social welfare system criminalizes us, child protective services criminalizes us, that entire network of social policy. It's about dangerous toxins. We're having schools being built on, you know, toxic grounds. Destruction here in New Orleans of public housing, the public education system, and public hospitals. And we don't talk about that, how that's a reproductive justice issue, right? Mm-hmm. But that trifecta of, like, destruction of the public social network, network and welfare system here in the state, and how that really has impacted black family and poor families in ways that we haven't even seen the beginning of, right? Water policy, let's talk about Detroit, right? Gentrification that's happening, and a lot of our, we find that a lot of the folks that we work with are getting pushed further and further out into New Orleans East, out to the outer lying suburbs, and they don't have services, so they can't come to us anymore because they're so far out, right? And we know that the bus system, transportation, the bus system in the city, you know, reproductive justice issue. Kids are spending 2 to 3 hours trying to get to school, and we don't really talk about how that impacts, you know, our ability to raise our children. And so, really, it's really about trying to make those interconnections and talk about this is what it is to be poor, to be black, to live in the urban and rural kind of centers of our worlds today. We're kind of excited about this month. One of our first events we're having is a movie showing tonight. It's going to be at 3300 South Broad, which is the corner of Washington and Broad, at the South Broad Community Health Center. We're going to be showing a movie called We Always Resist, Trust Black Woman. And so this movie is based on the 2010 Billboard campaign that appeared in Georgia, using little black bodies, little black children's bodies, and talking about how black women having abortion was genocide, right? So this was, these was a campaign that happened in Georgia and across the South, in states across the South, where anti-choice groups, religious conservative groups, came together to shame black women for abortion. And so, you know, that was not okay with reproductive justice groups. And they kind of organized this amazing campaign to fight that Billboard battle. So we're going to talk about that campaign and also put it in the context of what's been happening in New Orleans this year with a lot of the right-wing groups have kind of poured into the city, the billboards that have been used, again, using black children's bodies to get their agenda across. And we're going to talk about the organizing that's been happening on the ground with Black women around this issue. So we're excited. You guys would all come out. It's going to be from 6 to 8 p.m. tonight. Next week, we're also on August 20th at the Community Bookstore, Community Book Center, and on Bayou Road, we're going to be hosting another teach in looking at kind of how social policies regulate Black bodies. And Shana Griffin, who's a wonderful activist here in the city, is going to be kind of leading that teach in and talking a little bit more about some of the policies and what they look like on the ground.
All right. Well, that sounds great. Why we have you here, and we still have a few minutes left, unless you have to run out anywhere, let's continue having a conversation. So, speaking in the current context, I want to focus on a Black woman first, since that's the focus never of done. This movie too. And I'm sorry.
Since that's never done.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So Renisha McBride, mm-hmm. the person who murdered her, he was actually convicted. What does that mean in the context of reproductive justice and violence against Black bodies? What does it mean when, and I'm not putting my views out there and even me asking the question, but I want to have y'all answer what it means that he was convicted. What is, of course, let's start with what it means by him murdering her. Mm-hmm. And then if y'all would mm-hmm. kind of take us on a little bit of a mm-hmm. beginning there and say,
I mean, for me, Renisha McBride is one of the few Black women who's had violence done to her that you actually hear about. Mm-hmm. So for me, that was just a moment where I was like, oh, I understand that this happens all the time to Black men. We see it happen all the time to Black men. I think we are desensitized at this point to it happening to Black men, but we don't even think about what violence has done to Black women. And because we have this fear in American society of Black men being the aggressors and the threats without realizing that it's not Black men that's a threat, it's their Blackness that's a threat, and it just happens to be housed in a larger body when it's in Black men or something that's typically more threatening. So for me, when Renisha McBride was shot, it was really, it brought out the real, real intentions of folks who say that there's this fear of a Black man. No, it's not. There's a fear of Blackness that goes on in this country where someone will come and ask for help and be killed. Because that's all that was happening. And then someone will ask for help and be killed and then be vilified in the media for it, be told that she was just some drunk girl on the porch. Like, mm-hmm. But if it had been anyone else, if she had been someone white, we're not even at the point where we can ask, would she have been shot? We know she wouldn't have been shot because that whiteness is not threatening. Even if she was a big white male, wouldn't have been shot, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So. And I think that's something that kind of, that image is something that we deal a lot with in our work. Because we have, you know, that kind of intersection of what it means to be a Black woman and what our image portrays, because we are often seen as threatening, right? Mm-hmm. We also have a gender-based violence program that does a lot of DV, domestic violence, and interpersonal violence. And, you know, statistically across the ground here in New Orleans and around the country, if you are a Black woman who is experiencing some form of violence done to you, more often than not, you will actually be arrested. You have been, you know, you are.
We're viewed as deserving of that violence. Our bodies aren't valued in that way, that when they're harmed, it's an issue.
Exactly. And you often hear, like, the ways that, like, Black women in these situations are described. Big, loud, mm-hmm. right? You know, that kind of image of what Black womanhood means. Mm-hmm. So we have our own kind of stereotypes mm-hmm. in a lot of ways that play into how we're over-criminalized as well. And I feel like so much of that's what we talk about in Women with a Vision is that, like, there's two things happening. Laura's heard me talk about this a little bit in the past about, like, we're either invisibilized, we're not talked about, right? Or we're hyper-visibilized, mm-hmm. where we are this stereotype, this mythical welfare queen, this problem that needs to be solved in a community, right? Mm-hmm. The problem, like, blame the Black mother for her children. Blame, you know, it's we are the thing mm-hmm. that public health and social welfare systems are targeting and attacking in a lot of ways. So what does that mean when the image of Black womanhood that you do see is also an image of, like, this is the problems of this city? We saw this a lot in the discussion about the kind of rebuilding and renewal of the city when people were talking about how, like, you know, these Black women in the projects are what's keeping progress mm-hmm. from New Orleans back, right? And so that definitely is a part of our work as well. I just returned from Jacksonville last week, where we were bringing to light the case of Marissa Alexander, which was a woman that we happened to hear about because of what happened to Trayvon Martin. Mm-hmm. And so this was a woman who a domestic abuse survivor who had just had birth, and her her partner came and was threatening her, and so as a warning, she shot
the
into the ceiling to make him go away. So she was arrested. She was not allowed to stand her ground to protect herself, and she was sentenced to 20 years in prison. And so that case has been is up for appeal right now, and if she's been denied another stand your ground hearing, means that she cannot, although Zimmerman was allowed to argue for a stand your ground appeal, he, Marissa Alexander, was not allowed to argue that, right? And so she is now facing 60 years in prison in the, when her new trial starts in December. So again, this is not new. We hear about so many violent survivors who are criminalized for fighting back, for trying to survive. And in some cases, you'll see like almost 50% of particularly Black women who are in jail for fighting back. And so this is not a you know, isolated case. This happens to Black women and queer women across the board. And how women have, who resist structural violence and intimate partner violence, are often punished severely for that. And what does that look like when we have no other, when they have no other ways of being able to access help? Because again, the police for them are not the answer. The police are ones who are actually enacting violence against them as well. And so that, again, the complexity of our lives, that can only be done when we move beyond certain frameworks to really talk about what it is in the whole experience of a Black woman's lives.
And I think often, just like historically, Black women have not been able to really access the luxuries of that other women in this country have been able to. So even historically, Black women weren't viewed as, you know, soft or someone that was deserved to be taken care of. They were viewed as basically the mules of the earth. You know, they were, that's where that whole stereotype of the strong Black woman comes from, is because she's supposed to be able to take anything that comes to her, whether it's violence, rape, whether it's her children being killed. That's what's supposed to make us strong. And if that's the source of our strength, then really you can do anything to our bodies and it not be an issue. You know, it's a real twisted narrative that comes around Black women that's been there for decades, centuries at this point. But we're still supposed to just take all this violence and trauma on our bodies and not be able to address it because we're not actually human beings, you know?
Yeah. So one thing that I wanted to get at with my question was, obviously, was I don't think that even him being convicted is progress. So I wanted Women with a Vision to vision with us a little bit. And what does progress look like? What is reproductive justice? When we're in a space where it's not necessary to always uplift that conversation. I know it's such a far off place to think that we're there, but what does it look like and how do we get there?
Yeah, and I also was curious if you could add in that context, because you're speaking, I thought it was a really good point about how mainstream white feminism, like how, what would be a good type of relationship to have, you know, like what would that actually look like in a way that feels validating to your experience.
I can say one. So one of the things that I heard in your question, Gahiji, is like Women with a Vision has taken really strong stances around criminalization and criminalization as a reproductive justice issue. And that what that means is that we're taking on white supremacy, and that what we're talking about in the context of why Renisha McBride could be murdered is we are talking about white supremacy, and that one of the most challenging and troubling things that we have in the middle of her case is how to, that the very system that we have to acknowledge everyday white supremacist practices and violence is an institution of white supremacy. And how do we grapple with it, the like what it means to be able to have in the courts, which in we don't have to even talk about the like how this is an institution that is both produced by and productive of racism, that's what we have right now to recognize the atrocity that happened to her.
Yeah, I mean, if we're talking realistically about the state of the criminal justice system, if that's what we're going to call it in America, something like the Trayvon Martin verdict, that is the system working. That's actually a sign of it working, and something like Renisha McBride's killer being convicted is a minor flub here and there, but the conviction and the lack of care for Black bodies and the violence that's done to them systemically, that's what the criminal justice system is all about. That's how you can get people off for killing Black bodies, and it, you know, you have a social media storm for a few months and then you never hear about it again because at some really deep level, people understand that it is part of the system that we're living in.
Yeah.
And I think that's the complexity of reality of this system. And I feel like there's no easy answers. I don't think Women with a Vision has an answer. I think it's something that we're all grappling with. I know that it's been an interesting discussion to see around the Marissa Alexander case, where a lot of the civil, more kind of mainstream civil rights groups were like, end Stand Your Ground, this is a ridiculous law. And then you had Marissa's attorneys and the activists on the ground saying like, but she has a right to access Stand Your Ground law. So why, you know, so like, how is it applied? It's because it's being applied differently for white folk or white appearing folk, and black people. And so the grapple with like the intricacies of what this means, you know, it's hard. And I don't think we have an easy answer for that, because we know that to only be able to have some sort of forms of redress through a system that is meant to criminalize us is not the answer.
Sounds like the answer then is to get rid of that system. By the way, all the views expressed here are those of the workers of Women with a Vision.
All of that on us.
No, because you're in this conversation, and I'm not, and myself, and do not reflect those of W.T. Rowler Tulane University. Kezia said some stuff too.
Answer your question, Kezia. To answer your question, I think, you know, it's interesting because we wrote an open letter. We were part of this open letter recently that was written to the New York Times and Planned Parenthood that was addressing a recent article that came out about how, like, these pro-choice organizations like Planned Parenthood were just discovering that we should move beyond choice. And so this article was like, this is a new thing. You know, no one had thought of this before. How cool. And it's just like, you really gonna do that to us, you know? And so this group of mostly Black-led and women of color-led organizations from across the country wrote an open letter saying, like, actually, let me give you this 20-year-old history of, since we've been thinking about this for 20 years and organizing around this on the ground for 20 years, and to, again, invisibilize that history is an act of violence against us. You know, like, let's talk about how we should be given voice and our movements valued, right? And so there's
been a reproductive justice issue.
Yeah, and it's, yeah.